Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's February 4th, 2014. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 in the Good Beer Seal. We're out here at Roberta's in Bushwick, heritageradionetwork.org. You should join it. You can be a member. There's a lot of benefits, and we love being here going into our 200th episode soon in 4 years. We've got a great show tonight. We got Rich Buchetta from Single Cut Beersmith in Queens.
Good evening, Jimmy.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
And Greg Dorosky from Greenport Harbor.
Hey, Jimmy.
Just said before going there, I said, you know, I can't remember your names, even though I know Rich and Greg, but you know, we're part of this great New York City beer community. Rich, you know, you're one of the first new breweries in New York City in a long time, aren't you?
True. Well, in Queens, especially, you know, there are a lot of places popping up now. You know, a lot of nano breweries, but we were the first microbrewery to open in Queens since the days of Prohibition. So it's been a while. Yeah, it's been quite a drought there.
So how's it going? I mean, you had the first difficulty when you were about to open. There was Hurricane Sandy, right?
Right, right.
So that delayed your opening.
Delayed. We were fortunate. I mean, you know, really unfortunate for guys like Barrier, who fortunately pulled themselves out of it. But for us, it was just the government sort of shutting down and delaying our permits, which we were really anxious to get. At that point, we'd already been delayed by a number of permitting things. It's New York City. So for it to happen at that time, you know, the timing wasn't great, but it could have been much worse. So
but you guys did it, and you know, over a year later, you're making more beer than you thought, right?
By far, yeah. We're already into our third year projections after 1 year.
And there's some beers that you're making, like the Billy the Half Stack, which is like the classic IPA that are really stand out, like one of my top IPAs in the city right now.
Thank you very much. Yeah, yeah. We're really all about the hops, so we've been pushing our IPAs, and you know, it's been a good year for us, but I really think that we're starting to just hit our stride now. There's just so many things, even with whatever background you've had, that you just learn by doing it yourself in your own brewery, and operational, and so many aspects that took about a year for us.
You've really impressed us, and we have a lot to talk about today about having your own brewery and what difference that makes. And Greg Dorosky, too, from Greenport Harbor Brewing, we've had you on a couple of times, and you've often talked about the pride you take in brewing your own craft beer for a living.
Yeah, you know, it's been very important for me as a brewer, you know, to really emphasize the importance of a brewer. You know, it seems kind of, and I guess it is very self-interested to emphasize the importance of a brewer, but, you know, you would think with something like a brewery, the brewer is of some importance. you would think.
Well, it's like a chef or maybe a pitcher on a baseball team.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't really do without a good one, right?
You would hope. And, you know, I think over the course of, you know, we've been talking about this, Jimmy, for, what, at least 2 years, I think was the first show I was on here when we kind of started just briefly touching on contract brewing. You know, my opinion of it has evolved over time and talking with people. And, you know, I think we'll see through the course of this show how all three of our opinions differ a little bit. And, you know, that's something that's good. And I think something that we would all agree on is that discussion is important and
so
truthfulness.
A little bit of the intro. So, and Augie Carton from Carton Brewing is going to be joining us later, too. So our show tonight is we're going to talk about contract brewing. So, big question that keeps coming up is what is craft beer? You know, you can go to the Brewers Association site, and there's a lot of definitions, and they keep changing, and there's nano breweries and brew pubs. But at the end of the day, what is craft beer? And later we'll break down the different types of breweries. But one reason we put the show together is that Rich Bucciotta at Single Cut inadvertently created a controversy.
Yeah.
He posted a little sign in his brewery, which was, to him, it means something, and it got picked up by media. And what did the sign say, Rich?
It said, contract brewing will be the death of craft beer. And we wrote it in big, dark letters. It was a little 8.5 by 11 printout that we posted next to our washrooms in our tap room. And, you know, it wasn't something that we were getting up on rooftops and shouting, but it certainly was a philosophy that and a belief system that we all have at Single Cut. And it originates from the fact that this industry modeled itself after the word craft. You know, it began with a bunch of lunatics and fanatics that rose up against the macro breweries of the day and decided that they'd had enough. And
so if you go way back, I'm going to go way back, like with Tom Acatelli's book, Audacity Hops, you got Ken Grossman,
right,
Sierra Nevada, and this new Albion Brewery. And these guys were like buying used milk, you know,
that's
processing
right.
things and
that's right.
welding them together.
That's right. And they were, cobbling together whatever they could, because back in those days, the equipment just wasn't available on that scale as it is today. So you really got to tip your hat to these guys, and they were as hands-on as you could be about what they did. They had the passion, they had the belief, the drive in something that was really special. And that was the birth of this industry. And I think that, fortunately for all of us, the industry has really exploded, and it's doing very well, and I don't see that trend reversing itself ever. But,
you're rich, because it's like, You did get a lot of content. There was Beer Pulse and Chris O'Leary on Brew York, New York.
Right.
People were covering this. And let's just talk about what kind of feedback did you get? Did people make death threats to you?
No. It wasn't quite that severe at all. It's important for me to finish the point before, and I'm going to answer that next, Jimmy. For me, those are my heroes. Those are the guys who really, to me, did it right. They were hands-on. They touched and influenced every aspect of the process of making that beer. And the thing about that sort of beer is that it's not product. There's something very special about it that, we all believe in. You know, we don't just buy beer as some product off the shelf. It has real meaning to us. And to me, look, some people may say, oh, that's hogwash, whatever. I'm sorry, those are my opinions, and I think there are a lot of people out there who believe the same way, and that's what the best example of the craft beer industry is. So, to me, now with the advent of craft brewing, I think the goalposts have been moving quite a bit, and, you've got contract brewing, which clearly we're going to talk about tonight, and a lot of things going on that I don't think are crappier forefathers would necessarily believe was what they intended the industry to be about. And those are the things that, I don't believe in. And that's why I put up the sign. I felt that, let's right the ship a little bit. Let's get back to that, to giving craft meaning.
So there you go. I'm going to pull it up on my Twitter. I got the sign. It was at Single Cut. It says, contract brewing will be the death of craft beer.
Right. So I didn't get any death threats at all. There was a little bit of controversy on this one Facebook page, and a number of prominent contract brewers sort of got enraged over it, which was surprising to me because we did not single anybody out. We just made a blanket statement about what our belief system is, and that's all it was, and it was a quiet little sign that we had next to our washrooms, and suddenly it blew up, and it surprised all of us the way it did. But the way it worked out is because of that notoriety, all these people came out of the woodwork, and I'm talking about consumers, brewers, distributors, and retailers, every aspect of the beer industry and consumer area got in touch with us and said, right on. Thank you for saying what you did. I so believe in what you're standing for. So it was reassuring for us that we're not the only, fanatics out there, that we're not alone with these thoughts.
So, Rich, a little later in the show with one of our producers, Justin Kennedy, he did a breakdown of different types of breweries,
right,
and we're going to talk about that. But for you, what does contract brewing mean? How do you define that? Or how do you define being a – what do you call yourself? How about that?
You know, that's a good question. I don't really like to use the word craft that much
anymore.
Are
you a brewer?
We're an artisanal brewery is the best description I can tell you, is that we're all very hands-on. It's all in-house. We would never contract brew. If the day comes that we cannot meet demand because of our capacity, we simply won't meet demand. That's the way it's going to be.
What if like Yankee Stadium says, you know, Rich, you're making some great beer in New York City. We want cans for, Yankee Stadium.
Right.
Now, what would your options be? Would you be able to bring in a mobile canning unit, make that in-house?
Yeah, and we're
would you have to go to Wisconsin or something?
No,
and make it?
Yeah, we could do that, but we would never. And we've had opportunities like that already that we've turned down. We're dyed in the wool in terms of our philosophy of what craft beer should be, and I can tell you right now, and you can repeat this 10, 20 years from now, it'll never deviate. You know, we are going to be 100% in-house, a true New York City brand, and that's who we are.
You know, just at the bar, as we were waiting for the show, the distributor in New York for a carton, it's Jay, he's from American Beer Distributor. Great guy,
right.
They
yeah.
really know their beer and have yeah. a lot of great small brands. We were talking about what contract brewing means, and he said, one thing is if you have a brewery and you go to make beer in different parts of the country, mm-hmm. one of the big changes is the water.
Sure. There's so many factors. It's the water. It's the equipment. The equipment, knowing how to operate the equipment and the intricacies, and every piece of equipment has its nuances that you sort of have to work around and figure out. These all will influence the beer, and it's not just the brewing of the beer. It's the it's the cellaring of the beer, the cellar work, the maturation process, even the packaging of the beer. These all can influence the beer quite dramatically. So that's why it's important that whoever the brains behind this beer, whoever the impassioned souls are that created this beer, they've got to monitor every step of the process if it's going to be done to its best potential.
Now, before we move on, what beer are we drinking now? It's a pale ale from
yeah,
Single Cut,
it,
right?
Yeah, it is. It's we call it Bond TNT Pale Ale. This is using all Australian and a little bit of New Zealand hops. So fruity, a little dank, kind of hop profile that we really love.
Yeah, I can taste it like New Zealand-y.
Yeah.
It's like kiwis.
Yeah, it's in there, and pineapple, yeah.
Yeah.
It's got that stuff.
So if I'm coming to New York, we know a lot of our listeners, again, support heritageradionetwork.org. Become a member, but a lot of our listeners, we have friends in England, Michigan, Florida, California. When they come to New York, they like to know where to go, where to get good beer. So do you have a tasting room at Single Cut?
Yeah, we've got a tap room, and it's open Thursday through Sunday. You can check out our website for all the hours and what we're offering on tap and all those things. And yeah, we that's actually one of the favorite parts of our jobs is interacting with our consumers and hanging out with them in the tap room. We all love that. So, yeah, it'd be great to see everybody.
You guys are in Astoria, Queens?
Yeah, Astoria, Queens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Oh, cool. And we also got Greg. You're the first guy we ever talked about contract brewing with on the show. A lot of things have changed since you first came on 2 years ago. Our good friend Jeremy Cowan, who's been behind a lot of great brands, Coney Island and Schmaltz, he's also the president of New York City Brewers Guild. Recently, he opened his first physical brewery upstate for Schmaltz, and he released a beer last year called The Death of Contract Brewing. That was the name of the beer. So, I think everyone ultimately wants to own a brewery. I think that owning a brewing has a lot of prestige, and I think that people do realize that there's a quality difference with owning a brewing. Even Brooklyn Brewery, who has had made beer and contracted, who we all love, really committed to New York and built a brewery here recently. Why were you so passionate about it? You were the first guy really to talk about this on the show a couple years ago.
Well, for me, it kind of started as just an issue that we would joke around about when we were out at a bar and we'd see a certain beer on tap and, people standing around ranting and raving. I, for one, love to hear myself talk, and it just kind of became something that we all love to talk about, and it's kind of evolved over time. And I wrote a piece about a year ago talking about contract brewing from my perspective as a brewer, and I had some really good discussions with people in the industry, people that I really respect, and from those initial times of standing in a bar to now, for me, it's kind of evolved into a really philosophical issue. And I think, you know, it starts with two non-negotiables, really. First, that beer, you know, the beer has to be good, okay? If someone's beer is bad, whatever that means, you know, I guess starting at a technical sense, you know, if it's technically flawed, if it has diacetyl, if it's oxidized, you know, it we don't even need to talk about it anymore. It's bad. You know, the second issue, which I think we can all agree on, is truthfulness. You know, and that's where, you know, I think some people can get a little frustrated when you look at contract-only, quote-unquote, breweries that are out there who market and position themselves in the industry as a brewery. It is a little misleading.
But you've lost some of your passion in the last 2 years.
No, I think it's because I've just matured.
I think it's because when you work so hard as a brewer, you're actually getting tired. Because 2 years ago, you were, I'm making my beer. That's the only way to make beer. And well, now we've heard your nuance.
Well, you know, it's.
I think you're tired. I think you've been making beer for 2 years.
But no, it's still.
It's a lot of work. It's one thing about making beer. It's a lot of hard work.
It is a lot of hard work. And I think that's a very, very important point. Because for me, once you get past those two kind of non-negotiables, it becomes a really philosophical issue that starts with a conception of a beer, whether it's a flavor profile, whether it's a name, and it ends with beer that you have in your glass, okay? And I think something that Rich pointed out here, there are so many decisions that brewers make along the way to making what's in your glass, whether it's the recipe they've put together, whether it's readjusting mash temperatures, whether it's substituting in hops when you run out of hops that are on your contract, whether it's fermentation temperatures, you know, stuck mashes, you know, whatever.
So it's like there's been like making homemade food and buying Stouffer's or something like that. But hold on one second. We're going to take a short break. We take a bunch of breaks here and we promote little breaks. But hey, you take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Yeah.
You're listening to Bang Bang Sun by Iggy Dean on heritageradionetwork.org.
So, you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile beer cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit greatbrewers.com today.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. Who's here at Heritage Radio Network? What's up? You got Greg? Everybody say your name.
I'm Greg.
Richard.
I'm Justin.
And I'm Augie.
Wow, it's like we went from two guests to four. So Augie Carton from Carton Brewing just walked in. And Justin Kennedy, one of our producers. So let's have Greg. Greg was talking a little about his feelings about he's a brewer. He's very proud in the fact that he makes beer himself at a brewery. And keep going a little bit, and then we have a couple questions to go.
Okay,
through, right?
You know, so it's a philosophical issue, and you know, as we were talking about, there's so many points in the brewing process that, for me as a brewer, I see as supremely important to craft beer, and this is not to say the marketing aspects or the sales aspects or the branding or all that are meaningless, because as we know, they are. But, you know, picking up on some of the things that Rich was saying, you know, what makes a craft product special is the people that make it and the process that they're doing. So for me, the issue really is kind of less about who owns the actual equipment or who owns the metal, who owns the kegs. It's who's actually doing the process. So it's not so much ownership of the equipment or the brand. It's really ownership of the brewing process. Like,
but you've evolved then.
I think so. You were joking around about becoming a little bit more nuanced about it. I think it's, if you go back, at least for me, reflecting on my original position, it really has always been about the process. I've just kind of learned a little bit.
Why don't you tell us your original position, because that was 2 years ago.
Well, I think my focal point was a little bit different. You know, it's...
But say what it was. Go back 2 years. You're a passionate young brewer at a new small brewery. Why did you say you were anti-contract?
So looking at it initially, to me, it seemed like once you externalize the process of brewing, it becomes problematic. Okay? But I think there are some very good examples of gypsy brewers, let's say, who are really very much in control of the brewing process. No. And you know, we were talking on...
No, Greg, before I'm going to cut you off, because before we get to that, the whole base of this contract, Justin's going to break it down for us a few minutes, but the whole basis of the contract versus anti-contract brewing is all about commercial brewing. It's that at some point, people scale up and it's good for business, but honestly, for us as consumers, it doesn't really matter. What really matters is that for many of us, we've had our best experience with homebrew, which is a growing trend. It's one of the few growing trends. And many of us, even Carton and Rich, were homebrewers who became pro, and you too,
yeah.
Greg. But it's also like there's that initial phase where you're still comfortable with a small batch. And still to this day, there's nothing like having a simple homebrew that's affordable and fresh. So the real issue here is, how do we make commercial beer that is worth paying for, that's better than what, you know, you can get from homebrew? And let's ask Rich and Augie dive in on that, because that's my take on it, is that, yes, we can have this conversation as commercial brewers, but really for consumers, I want a super fresh, really good, high-quality beer with good ingredients, made by somebody that understands good beer.
For us at Single Cut, we have a mantra or a slogan or however you want to put it, and it's more than just a mere slogan. Our philosophy is that mastery knows no shortcut, and it isn't just some clever bit of wording that we put together. It's something that we really live to, and the meaning behind that is that, look, if we wanted to really capitalize and make a lot more money than we're making now and be in the black, and for me not to have spent my life savings to open up a brewery and all that, I could have easily have taken my recipes and contract brewed them out, and the beer would have been good. You know, it would have been fine. But, you know, my aspirations are a lot higher than that. But
let's go back, because you were an award. You won some awards as a home brewer, right?
Yeah.
And people knew that. Shane Welch from Six Point did. Augie, you and Jesse. Well, Jesse Ferguson, you guys were home brewers too. But there's a lot more people who are home brewers, award-winning home brewers. Garrett Oliver was first part of New York City Home Brewers Guild. A lot of people have started that way.
Sure, but you know, the point I wanted to make is that you know, you can look, if you want to take the shortest the least path of resistance to profitability, contract brewing's for you. If you want to really stand behind something and sweat the details and make a brilliant product that people really believe in, you know, you're not going to buy into contract brewing. Look, there's going to be other points of view on this, and I'm going to speak for myself. And that's the way I feel about it, is that there's no substitute for my involvement, Brian's involvement, the guys that work in the brewery at Single Cut. There's absolutely no way that we would ever do it any other way to get the results that we are getting right now. So that's the way I feel about it. And I think that – and the other part of it is that, look, when I look at all the great beer markets in the United States, and there are quite a few, and I'm a big fan of all of them, and I've traveled to them all many times because those are my heroes, especially on the West Coast. you look at those markets. Contract brewing is a real foreign word out there. You know, it doesn't really exist. These guys, to me, are doing it the right way. They're about pride before profit. You know, they're about making something really special, and that's the real satisfaction for them. And, you know, look, in time, the profitability will come. But for me, in this marketplace, New York City, it's been backwards. It's been the other way around. It's about maximizing profitability at the expense of brilliance.
You know, when I look at the Brewers Association numbers, it's actually encouraging. I mean, the growth of the almost 3,000 licensed breweries in America, but most of them, especially the new ones, are either nano breweries or brew pubs.
Well, I think that's a very good point. You know, and I think for me, one of the things that really struck me, I guess it was 2 years ago at the Craft Brewers Conference, a slide came up where they talked about the frequency of contract brewing was actually heading down. There was a downward trend, and everyone celebrated that, right? It seems like locally there was a little bit of a reverse trend. So it was that disconnect that was a little troubling.
Although I will say that, I mean, if we talk about New York City and New York region, I mean, we've had opening recently. I mean, first it was like Rich at Single Cut, and we had Carton, Augie's here in New Jersey.
Hello.
But now it's like, I mean, in the next 3 months, in New York City alone, we have Gun Hill opening in the Bronx. We've got Finback just opening in Queens. We've got Other Half opening in Brooklyn. And there's a couple others. And you guys, Greg, you've got a secret project. You might be doing something in Brooklyn as well, in Gowanus. But, you know, it's like, you know, that's amazing and that's exciting. But, Augie, tell us about your position, because, you know, you guys also have a stake in this.
Yeah, it's funny. I kind of treat Carton Brewing like my own contract brewing. We built it. But the metaphor for me is always a chef, right? What kind of chef do you want to be? You can be a guy that's running a McDonald's kind of burger stand where everything's the same and it doesn't matter who does it. And then you're contract brewing one of the massive houses. You can be a guy who runs four or five kitchens at a very exceptional level. And the kind of chef we wanted to be was guys that did our own stuff in our own kitchen. So I partnered up with a home brewer, so he'd run brewing. But I
Jesse, right?
Yeah, Jesse. Yeah. And now we have a brew staff of three. And I walk in, and I'm working on different projects with all three of them, you know, four of them, depending on what we're talking about. And it's that give and take in our kitchen where everybody gets involved that can't happen when you're dealing with a guy who's dealing with 10 other guys every day of the week. So for us, that business model didn't make any sense. We wanted it to be our kitchen, our food that we were putting out. And, you know, if we've got any credit in the world, it's our creativity. And that's all born of just the four of us sitting around in our room saying what would be cool to do.
So what beer did you bring us tonight, Augie?
I brought O-Dub, which is our double IPA.
Let's try it. You've been on like three times in the last... We yeah. love having you on, man.
Thank you, man. It's 077.
And you actually look like one of some of our recent guests, Mark Aldrich, who's one of the stars of Newsies on Broadway, is also a happy hour guy. And you kind of look like him now. So you're saying that we're influencing you?
Everybody with a red beard starts to look the same sooner or later. But yeah, so...
Come on,
so
let's taste the beer. Come on.
Oh,
this one. I got to do it myself.
I can't reach you from over here.
I think the chef analogy is really interesting because... You know, it does highlight the importance of that actual doing of the process somehow.
Yeah.
You know, it's not necessarily, you know, as the brewer, you're the guy who's cleaning every keg, cleaning every tank, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you can have a staff, you can have people who are doing the processes, but I do think it's control of those processes that makes it so important.
Oh, wait. Well, one of the guys that this whole show is based on the fact that when Rich at Single Cut posted his famous sign, what was it again, Rich?
Contract brewing will be the death of craft beer.
So when Chris O'Leary, who's got the great web's blog, is Brew York New York,
yep.
Reposted that, and Justin, who's one of our producers, picked that up. Well, Chris just tweeted in because he's actually has a day job. Like many of us, even though he's a beer writer, he has a day job. And you're awesome, Chris. He tweeted in or emailed earlier because it's the same. He said, here's a question that he wants to ask you guys. And this is a good place for us to go. The battle against contract brewers reeks of petty infighting Isn't there a bigger enemy that might be more deserving of a battle than contract brewers, i.e., Bud, Miller, and Coors?
Oh, no. That argument's over. I mean, I think everybody knows that those guys are, you know... I hate to even dignify that with a response, to tell you the truth. I think that, you know, anyone who in the quote-unquote macro craft brewing industry that acknowledges that the macro breweries are the enemy, I think you're just being redundant. I mean, it's obvious that we're all in it to do something completely contrary to what they're in business to do. So, but I'll tell you one thing that the macro breweries don't do is that they don't contract brew. You know, if they're going to distribute their beer elsewhere, they're going to open up a brewery and they're going to do it the right way. So, got to give them credit for that.
Now, I don't usually talk about the macros on air, but someone sent me, there was the Bud ad where they were saying they were the local brewer.
That's right.
And they were showcasing how in all parts of the country they had breweries.
That's right. That's right. And I have to say, I applauded them for that because I thought, you know what? You can say what you will about the macro breweries, but in that aspect of their operations, they got it right.
With full disclosure, my uncle used to sell Bud in the 70s.
Yeah. And look for, you know, clearly the product is watered down and insipid and all those things, but the consistency's there. The craftsmanship is there. It's a very well-made product. You cannot deny that, but it is product, you know. Yeah. And
to keep it on the restaurant metaphor, because that was working for us. When you're opening a restaurant, be it a pub, a bistro, or a fine dining place in your town or neighborhood, which I think is the kind of levels we're talking about for ourselves, you're never comparing yourself to McDonald's. And if you are, you're in the wrong business. So bringing McDonald's into this conversation is a waste of time.
That's right.
The problem comes, so when your letter went up, I was actually in an airport in Australia trying to get home to America and had 3 hours to kill. So I was very in tune to that going on. And my whole thing on it, where I think it got taken completely wrong, but I think what the gist of what you're saying, what I think is real is, so ultimately, let's start with, if the liquid tastes good as a consumer, that's all I care about. I don't care how you made it if it tastes great. But as somebody who's committed real capital to starting a business in our town, if you build breweries like we've done, you're committing capital and jobs to your community. And there's people that will support that even if they don't like your liquid. Right? Not that they should. I think they're wrong. But there's people that aren't committed at that level competing for a local market.
You know,
market
you just brought
share.
Up something,
that's a
which
great,
is I think what I'm seeing, guys,
point.
even seeing our friends like Schmaltz opening and brewing up state, communities and states get behind that kind of investment because breweries are a different type of investment than a cafe or something else.
But the consumer gets behind the idea.
Right.
If you write on your bottle, I'm from 25 miles from Augie's Brewery, and your beer is made upstate New York or deep Pennsylvania, then...
So if you're opening a brewery, are you a sex god?
You know, I like to think so.
I want to say that before we take our break. We got another break coming up. We're going to take a short break and help promote heritageradionetwork.org. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Breweries are sex gods. All right, yeah.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
You're listening to Written from the Pantheon by Iggy Dean on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, come
come on. In the American growler.
Oh, I'm here. Come on.
Hello.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio. Out here in Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, we're drinking single cut. What pale ale was this,
Richie? The Bond TNTPA.
And Augie brought some carton.
077XX.
If you're coming up to New, if you're coming out to New York City, we've got some great new breweries and single cut and carton. And there's great places to drink beer, including Jimmy's Number 43 and Good Brew Seal Bars. And single cut, if I'm going to Astoria, Queens, that's the one thing. It's a brewery tourism thing. Our friend Ben King wrote a great book about Northeastern brewery tour. I would go to a brewery almost over many bars now to taste beer at the taps. And we're talking about contract brewing and non-contract, but I think that's part of it, too, is the sense of community. Because, like, I'm in Cape May, New Jersey. You know what? I'm in North Cape May. There's a decent brewery there where you can go in and drink beer and get a tour. Or I'm in Astoria, Queens, or Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey.
Hello.
There's a brewery now. So what do you guys think about that? Do you think the importance of your brewery is that it's a sense of place? It's a place for people to drink beer and have a community, or what?
Can I curse on the show?
Come on, go for it.
Fuck yes.
There's no FCC, man.
Fuck yes, absolutely. That's one of the main things.
We're radio, but we're a podcast.
Listen, this is a great crew we've got on this show. All these guys are awesome. But, you know, let's give a shout-out also to Peekskill. Peekskill's incredible. One of our heroes locally. Other half, so far, they've been doing a great job. I expect they're going to be awesome. So, you know, the playing field here locally is really changing for the better. So we're very, very excited about all of
so
that.
So local breweries means not only more good beer, it means a better community and a better place to drink good beer.
Yes, right? Yes, thank you. That's what I wanted to talk about. Because in our short history, we've only been open for a little over a year. You know, we've helped influence the local community. We've helped expand local business. We've helped increase local real estate values. You know, we've helped people have a greater sense of pride for their neighborhood. You know, there are a lot of things that a brewery brings to a community, and these are all the things that we love being in business to supply.
So, Rich, I know when you first opened, let's go segue to this. When you first were looking for a brewery, I remember you looked in different parts, you looked in different counties.
Yeah.
So, you probably picked an area that had affordable rents, right?
Yeah, you know, relatively speaking, it's New York City.
But then, since you've opened, you're saying what? The area's getting more expensive.
I don't know that it's getting more expensive, but it's getting more notoriety, and we're seeing more cool and hip restaurants and pubs opening up in Astoria, and it's really changing for the better. I think it's progressing. So these are the influences that a brewery can have, and that's about community.
So when we made the decision to open up in our community, we opened up in the town I grew up in. My cousin and I are partners, and the two of us have lived within a mile of this brewery for 43 years.
Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey.
So we never thought about anywhere else, but that argument was, if we make beer in our town with our water, even if we fail everywhere else in the world, as long as it's well-made beer, the people from our neighborhood should love it. Because I believe wherever you're from, be it Ohio or California, if you don't believe your town has the best bagel, the best pizza, the best cheeseburger, and ideally the best beer, then you should move.
Ice cream.
Yeah, whatever it is. But whatever they make in your town should taste good to you and better than everyone else just by advantage of being made with your water. And even though you're wrong, unless you're from Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey, you should claim it. And that's the thing that I thought would extend to our beer. If you make beer in your town with your water, you people should like it.
And let's go back. One thing about the show tonight was we were discussing contract versus non-contract, and it's been on the table for a couple of years, but one of our producers, Justin Kennedy, did do a little segue. And
I may need the notes because I don't remember what I said exactly.
Okay. Okay.
But I think I can break it down. I kind of put it into five different categories, the first one being kind of a brand brewery, which is what we're seeing a lot of in New York lately. Should I name names, Jimmy?
I think that your notes said there was no physical presence and not a... Well, this is where... See, each one of these is a value, but I love you that not a... personality who's
there's
known
not a personality.
A
there's not a an identifiable individual behind the brewery.
So there are some breweries like that where it's just the label, anyone can do that. You can say, you know what, let's get five. Like for Rich and what does it cost? Let's talk about money. What does it cost to just create a label that's a pure contract? This is what I think we're all saying. These are the bad ones.
If you just wanted to spend money to create the label and distribute, what does that cost, Rich?
Mere pittance.
So it's like the low level. This is the low level.
You want an actual figure? Mm-hmm. Well, okay, you've got to hire a graphic designer. You've got to hire a website developer. Okay. So I'd say you're looking at about, depending on how big a brand you want to launch, I don't know, 10,000, 20,000.
But this is the low level, but this is something you could do if you really cared about beer, but that's all you had.
Right.
So then, Justin, the next level.
The next one was kind of like a, what did I call
brewery
it?
Brewery and planning.
Brewing and planning. So this is kind of how Brooklyn Brewery started. They started brewing beer upstate. Bronx has kind of done this lately.
Brooklyn Brewery originally did it this way.
Yeah, they started brewing, I think, at FX Matt up in Utica. And Bronx is doing this out in Wisconsin and also in Connecticut with their Bronx Pale Ale. But they have an intention of building an actual facility. And obviously Brooklyn Brewery has done that now with the gorgeous facility in Williamsburg, which I visited last Thursday and I was really impressed with.
And they did a long way also build a brewery too. So
right.
Brooklyn Brewery is one of our stellar breweries that did it right. But if you, and Bronx is also has intentions of, so you're saying,
and Bronx has kind of a person too, Sean McCain. Yeah. Whether he's not really an investor, but I think everyone knows him in the city, and
he's a personality.
Exactly, he's a personality,
there's also Damien. They have a great brewer from UC Davis.
Right.
They're a great brewery, but again, with Richie jump in. So what's the cost of? It's similar to being just brand only. Is that so? Bronx Brewery
contract brewing,
but Bronx Brewery had to invest in having a brewer.
Right.
And some team.
Sure.
And they're building a brand.
Right. Right.
So.
And I'm not. I can't speak for them. I don't know what their level, what their investment was, whether it was actual financial or whether it was shares in the company. There are many ways to skin that cat. So I'm not sure, to tell you the truth. You'd have to ask Sean that one.
No, it's there's a lot. We're covering a lot of bases. And then Justin next. So it was Gypsy. But we know.
The third one's kind of like a in between. Contract gypsy. Brewing and
you call it Gypsy.
A Gypsy brewing, yeah. So like Brian Stillwater, McKellar.
Or originally Pretty Things.
Pretty Things were also part of that. McKellar, Evil Twin, Grimm, who's based out of Brooklyn. And that kind of raises another question or another point is that, you know, these people are passionate about beer, but they either don't want to put the effort into raising funds, or they don't have the money. So I would like to ask Rich if we could comment on that.
Wait, before you defined it as, well, this is where it gets murky. The whole thing about this is murky. You got a brewery or you don't. And you said, before Rich speaks, you said, so brand only was there was no physical brewery and no brewery personality. But then when you get to Gypsy, it's no physical brewery, but there's a brewing personality.
Yeah, I think it's kind of the opposite of the brand only. It's, some might argue against me on this one, but...
But we also, the thing about Gypsy, it's like being cool. It's like, you know, if you like a certain shirt or something, actually, everyone that we consider Gypsy Brewery, we actually really like their beers. So Gypsy means that someone's been able to make beer at someone else's brewery and successfully, and people like it,
right.
which is a cool. So suddenly we're getting to the cool definition, right? But Augie, jump in, because
I'm going
to
call that one because
we're being way too hardcore here.
But no, Sam Adams and Brooklyn are, and Brooklyn, as much as I'm not discrediting them, but they still contract brew most their big labels. Those are contract brewers
that's
love.
The next category. What I'm saying is,
those are contract brewers people love. So that can't be the definition.
No, but we're getting there.
But the thing about the Gypsy thing is, I think it's a level of honesty in the fact that you're just whipping up what strikes you in whatever kitchen's available that week. It's like being a pop up restaurant rather than a fictitious restaurant.
You know, it was Pretty Things for us. Still, these are names that I think they probably are hugely successful, and we love their beers, but. You know, but Evil Twin, he's been based mostly in the States in Westbrook, in South Carolina, and now in Two Roads in Connecticut. But let's get to the next one because we're going to cover every base. So number four was,
sorry, Rich.
You call it diversified brewing.
Yeah, so this is kind of what Brooklyn is now, Six Point is now. I'm sure there's
like
a bunch
many,
of
many of our working breweries are doing this.
Yeah, they started off, we'll use Six Point as an example. They started off with a very small brewery, and then they're now outsourcing much of their production to kind of nameless, faceless breweries in Pennsylvania or Connecticut to brew the majority of their beer, which is available in pretty much every bodega or CVS.
The one thing I'll say is that I do know that I don't think it's totally outsourcing. I do think that they take a
They have someone there. They definitely do. They employ people in local markets.
Let's stop at that. You brought us to this far, so you kind of brought us from pure contract brand only. Then everyone thinks Gypsy's cool, and now diversified isn't cool. How is that not cool? But it's actually like they're making a lot of beer.
See, the thing is, I don't mind that at all. I get it. Like, if you're trying to find the amount of real estate you need to build the line in Brooklyn's almost impossible. I get that there's a step that people make and they react poorly to it, but I would bet a significant amount of beer coming out of the line at this point is Shane's beer. He's got staff living there. You know what I mean? There are just 6 point people there.
Yeah,
so that's like, but going back to the metaphor of a chef, you can be the world's greatest chef and have three restaurants in town. You know what I mean? Like, you just got to make sure your sous chef is somebody you depend on.
I'm going to give you guys a scoop on Six Point, and I'm breaking the story, and this is the truth. When they went to, they've expanded and they're brewing at a brewery in Pennsylvania. As far as I know, that's pretty much their brewery. They're making a lot of beer there. And what they did was they brought in they realized they needed a brewer from Germany who had the skills to brew at that level. And I'm proud of them. I think they did a great job of transitioning. That's a separate thing, but that's called diversified brewing.
But one thing that we're forgetting about is the impact on the consumer and community. And look, you're talking, since we brought it up, it's the only reason I'm commenting on it. But Six Point is a brand that built itself on being Brooklyn. Okay, most local people, when they think of Six Point, they raise their fist and they go Brooklyn and that kind of thing. But you know what are you talking about? The majority of their beer is brewed in Pennsylvania, so. What does that mean? Does it mean anything? Most people say, okay, yes, if the beer tastes good in the glass, what difference does it make? But, you know, to fanatics like myself, it does matter. There's a certain sense of pride in local community that I still believe in. And look, many people, the majority of people may disagree with me, and that's okay, but that's the way I see it.
So the carton model, we're already 5 years out, and we're only 2 years in.
You're making all your beer.
So yeah, we can't make any more beer. We're out of room. We're done. What I'm saying is, if when people ask what my dream is to, you know, grow as far as we can here and then be done. And I would like to ideally, the other end would be to have 7 20-barrel brew houses in America than, you know, 250s or whatever. I just think you want to be close. You want to be
fresh. At the same time, would you ever,
Brooklyn to Pennsylvania.
Let's put it this way: would you ever say, because at some point, let's say you got a big order for boat beer cans.
We've got that. We've said no to that. But the reason we said no to that is because we don't have that weight yet. I think Six Point does, and I think that's when that tips. If you walk into a house and they tell you what yeast to use, I don't think you should be making beer in their house. But there's this new guy in Connecticut you were just talking to. One of my favorite brewers, Keegan's, is brewing a lot there. And this guy's...
Are you talking about Two Roads?
I think so.
Phil Markowski, who's one of the most acclaimed New York area brewers.
But he doesn't have a brewery with extra capacity you can come brew at. He's built a place for guys that need to make beer to go to. Now, I haven't gone down that road yet because he's a capacity from day one. But that, like, if I could borrow a guy's kitchen, like, we co-brew with Barrier. I'm happy to make a beer with them in Barrier. You know what I mean? I'm not against that. The problem is when you walk into somebody's house and they can tell you how to make your beer
Richard, one second. So Justin, let's finish this. So it seems like diversified brewery, according to Justin Kennedy, is what many people are doing. They have a brewery and they're making other beer.
Jimmy, I don't think most breweries are doing that. I think a lot of breweries
But we're talking about the future. We're talking about
anybody
the next
with a
one.
National footprint.
Then the next is one is, that. You said traditional.
Traditional brewery.
Why'd you call it traditional brewery?
Well, I think that's, you know, it's traditional because it's like single cut, like carton. They're brewing beer themselves on their own space and selling it at the brewery and, you know, around town. That, to me, is a very traditional brewery. And I think that's more common than the other diversified brewery.
And what we're saying is the odds, even though we believe in the guys making their own brewery and their own – beer in their own breweries, but there's so many other. You just showed us there's so many other definitions and let's see. So Rich is dying to talk.
One thing I'd really like to talk about, and you know, we sort of skimmed on it, is that yes, there's a financial aspect to opening a brewery if you're going to do it, you know,
if you're going to go whole hog and open a brewery, of course, not everybody can afford it. I certainly couldn't afford it. I spent many years trying to find the money, so it was not easy for me. But I'd love to give a shout-out to the guys that I think are, to me, one of the best examples of a local brewery, and that's Barrier. These are a couple guys that had the skill set. They had the recipes. You know, they didn't have the money. So they could have easily taken their chops and farmed out their recipes and contract brewed and made a lot of money in a short amount of time and probably had a lot more notoriety and distribution and all those things. But instead, they were like, no, you know, we believe in craft brewing and we believe that it's a hands-on process and we're going to do it. And the only thing we can afford to do, I think they opened up with, what, a three-barrel system or whatever it was. It was really minuscule. And that's what they did. And they broke their fucking balls off.
They made great beer, too.
Working their asses off.
No, I bought two kegs from them every week.
I know you did. I know you're a fan.
They were really great.
Well, they're awesome. Beers. But they make great beer, but they distribute their own beer. They do it right. And, you know, everybody that says, well, you know, it's easy for you to talk about opening a brewery, you found all this money, whatever. You know what? These guys didn't, and they're doing it the right way, and they're not taking any shortcuts. So there's so many ways to skin this if you're willing to be patient, and you know, the rewards will be the same in the end. But you know, so that's an aspect that
let me say, Rich. You know, I would just we don't have that much time left, but Rich, I'm gonna make a toast to you because that was a leadership statement, and one thing that we do look for in brewers and in Colorado, a brewer is now the governor. We do hope for leadership from our brewers. So thank you for saying that because I also identify with Barrier Brewing, and I want to raise my glass to them because it was just a few years ago that when they had their small system, they went to New York Tap, and they won Best Brewery in New York State.
Yeah, they're awesome. Those guys are awesome.
And they really
awesome.
Made
Absolutely.
A statement. And since then now, you guys have all been opening.
Yeah.
To augment
your point, so New Jersey has had something like eight.
But okay, this is the serious beer show.
I know.
For real.
But to augment your point, there's like eight.
And on February 18th, we have New York State officials talking about.
I'm not going to stop talking.
New York State beer.
I will
watch
just
out.
Keep talking.
What? Anyway, so next week is Larry Bell. Larry Bell's coming from Michigan.
So we've had like eight breweries open up in New Jersey that qualify nationally as a brewery on that list. And they're all about a barrel big. And I think there's something cynical about that. I'm going to brew with somebody else till I have enough money to open my brewery. Because what you're saying is rather than commit the 50 grand I have to one barrel and getting 60 people to like my beer so right. I can show it to 100, what you're saying is I'm going to build a brand and it doesn't matter yep. that I cook.
Right.
And I think that's what you're talking about, right? Like, because this
yes,
day and age, you can start
you.
One, go three, go seven, go 15. And Cape May did it. You were talking about Cape May earlier. They were a seven. Now they're a 15.
When Cape May started, people were like, oh, who's making beer in Cape May? You can't be taken seriously. But when I went the second year, I went to their brewery. I was at the tasting room. I tasted the beer. Now they're growing. I'm like, you know what? That's how a good brewery starts. They have to
awesome,
invest.
By the way. Yeah.
They have to make beer and they grow. Right.
But there's something
but
so cynical.
It's a totally different
brand.
Model.
But there's yeah. something so cynical about my branding is what matters over my beer is what matters. And in this day and age, that barrier to entry is truly gone. This whole, I've got to have somebody else make my beer till I can make it.
Oh, you want this thing? Since Justin Kennedy did so much research on this show.
Sorry, Justin.
Justin, is there one last question you want to ask?
Well, there's a last there's a million questions I want to ask. But there's a last type of brewery, too. And that is the all-contract brewery, which we've seen actually a couple of lately. One is, well, it's not all-contract, but Two Roads, which...
I would say contract specialists.
Contract specialists. They wanted to do 2% of their own beer and then 98%
so other
people's beer. So
they realized there's a market yep. for a lot of people. It's like, you know, I'm in fashion. I want to design a shirt or something. I can go to a place in the West Side and someone can make me a sample and I can get 100 shirts and I'm suddenly have a label.
But
there's a need for that. And funny thing is, I'm only saying this because we're talking about business, and what Justin's saying is that actually it's like Levi Strauss making jeans for gold miners. The person making the beer is still the ultimate business. So maybe the guy who has a brewery, it backs you all up, is that, you know what? You should invest in a brewery. You should make beer. Two Roads in Connecticut, maybe for all the guys that out there that want to try out a label or they may never make beer on their own. That's a future brewing too. So
but,
I don't know. I'm
but
not
what
knocking
I like
that.
About them philosophically.
But the difference is, I want to say is that what you're saying. This, if you have the point is that if you have a brewery, then that is the entry point. And that's a for another conversation next time, I think. Yeah. Justin.
Yeah, so, well, there's another one up in Cambridge, Mass. That's opening soon that's all contract brewing.
But yet they're still brewing, they're making a brewery.
Yeah, they are making a brewery. But I think a lot of them are, you know, supporting breweries that are already existing. They're not catering to, we'll say, Queens Brewery or Diker Heights, whatever that is. I don't know exactly what that is. I've tasted their stuff recently, and I don't know that there's actually a person behind it. But they're catering to, you know, people like Terrapin from Georgia who want New York City distribution. And you could almost argue that if they're brewing the beer in Connecticut, it's more local than it would be for shipping it up from Georgia. So that's a totally that's different fair. Argument. Well, so, yeah, we're out of time, I think.
We are going to run out of time. Let's do this. Let's do a quick wrap up. Again, we've talked about Rich. Your quote is still the best. There's two. I'm going to go back to what we said. Rich Buchetta said, contract brewing will be the death of craft brewery. Last year, Schmaltz opened its own brewery, said they're making a beer called the death of craft of contract brewing because they're making beer. And Greg from Greenport says, what did you just say? I take great pride
in brewing craft beer.
And that's a great thing. So this is it. Let's make a toast. Let's raise our glasses. New York City Beer Week is coming up.
Yeah.
There's an opening night celebration at Grand Central, which promises to be a very special event. And, of course, we are producing the fourth time the New York City Brewer's Choice. Carton Brewing will be there. Greenport Harbor will be there. And Single Cut. But,
you
Rich, what do we have to say about this? What is Brewer's Choice? It's a place where our top brewers that we've curated come in New York City, pouring their best beer. And this year, many of them are making beers with New York State Grain, which is a whole movement, the regional grain movement.
Yeah, if you want,
and we have great food.
Yeah, you want to see what we're really about here in New York City, and that, you know what, the playing field has really changed, and we're going to be a force to be reckoned with in the United States in terms of the local brewing community. That's a place to come.
Check it out, nycbrewerschoice.com. February 26th. And, of course, the Wyeth Hotel, the coolest place in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. All right, so we're going to do a quick sign-off, but thanks again, Justin Kennedy.
Augie Carton.
Everybody say their name.
Rich Buchetta. Greg Dorosky.
All right. And thanks for joining us here every Tuesday on Heritage Radio Network. Again, thanks to GreatBrewers.com. They've been supporting us. It's almost our fourth year anniversary and 200 episodes.
Yeah.
Everybody, cheers to Beer Sessions Radio. All right. If you like us, hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Maggie Sienna, and Justin Kennedy, our engineer. Tonight, Evan. And thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.